We have a fairly long agenda. We will try to get through it as expeditiously as possible. And the good news is, we are now in the 2017-19 biennium, and because of the continuing resolution, we did not close government. So with that, I will open a work session on SB 374 relating to real ID conflict amendment. Senator Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 374 conforms existing statute of the Federal Real ID Act of 2005. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means previously approved the bill and it passed to the Senate. The A-3 amendment resolves conflict with Senate Bill 36. I recommend Senate Bill 374 be amended by the -A3 conflict amendment be reported out, do pass as amended.
Okay, discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Senator Thompson.
I'm going to vote no on this because I spent about a half an hour talking to my wife yesterday on the phone about how the price of our license are going to go up because for the advanced driver's license, and that way I can at least get a no on the record. Thank you.
Okay. It's voluntary.
I got to go home tonight.
It's voluntary.
Just for clarification, it only goes up if you opt to buy the license.
That's
like
what I mean.
A vanity.
It's voluntary.
Tell that to my wife.
I will.
She's correct.
Oh, yes.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion? Yes, Senator Girard, Senator Thompson. Seeing no others, motion carries. Colleagues, I'm going to jump around a little bit because I'm going by crib sheet of what's actually posted. So I'm going to jump to 5017, Legislative Branch Agencies, Senator Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 5017 is a budget bill for the Legislative Branch Agencies, Legislative Assembly, Legislative Administration, Legislative Council, Legislative Fiscal, Legislative Policy and Research, Legislative Revenue, and Commission on Indian Services. The Subcommittee on General Government approved a total budget of $118,941,664.660 positions for 447.81 FTE. Total fund budget is 18.6% less than the 2015-17 legislative approved budget. The general fund budget of $108,458,002 is 4.1% more than the 2015-17 legislative approved budget, but is 2.8% less than the 2017-19 current service level. Specific recommendations include reduction or anticipated revisions that the branch will carry into the next biennium, adjustment in assembly budget for equipment needs, adjustment to continual CAMS project funding that was not spent in 2015-17, funding for additional troopers for the Capitol, funds for continuation of operations planning, adjustment in legislative administration for information services organization needs, phase two of the disaster recovery project, funds to begin to install closed captioning in the Capitol, adjustments in legislative administration, other funds for bills drafting expenses, lease revenues, and the Oregon State Capitol Funds and Oregon Capitol History Gateway Funds, establishment of positions in legislative council, including an attorney and an editor to focus on public records, authorization to add and reclassify selected positions in legislative administration, legislative council, legislative fiscal with no additional fundings, a technical adjustment to remove funding from the legislative revenue office that should not have been carried forward. The General Government Subcommittee recommends HB 5017 be amended by the -1 amendment and be reported out, do pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Senator Johnson.
While I appreciate the attention to safety in this building, adding 7 more troopers in this building at a cost of $2 million causes me to wonder, was there a proportional increase in troopers out protecting Oregonians on our highways and byways? And I don't know if that was discussed in the committee. I don't know if it was discussed in public safety. But it just seems to me that Oregonians have an expectation of adequately funded troopers, and so I question resource allocation, but I will support the budget.
Any additional discussion, Senator Winters?
While there wasn't a proportional, I didn't have a discussion on what's happening with legislative assembly, but there was some increase added, particularly for the area of Josephine County. I need to add that for the record.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Any objection? Seeing no objection, motion carries. I'm going to jump. What I'm basically doing is going to the ones that were posted before we met. It's good that we met about an hour and 15 minutes later than we were supposed to. SB 111, Representative Wisnant, relating to school nursing facilities.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Honorable colleagues, Senate Bill 111 directs the Oregon Department of Education to aid school districts and education service districts with Medicaid billing for school nursing services. ODE will coordinate between school districts and Medicaid billing experts at the Oregon Health Authority, create district plans to maximize Medicaid billing for school nursing services, and provide a report to the legislature on the outcomes and the cost-benefit analysis of the program no later than October 1st, 2020. The bill has a $529,935 general fund, $108,776 federal fund impact to ODE and the Oregon Health Authority in the 2017-2019 biennium for three positions. Colleagues, Mona Sanderson and I were on a task force. This suggestion came from ODE. I compliment them on that. In the end, we think we're going to be gaining, if everyone does this, $44 million a year from Medicaid money for school nursing services. The Education Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 111 be amended by the Dash 9 Amendment and reported out due pass as amended.
Okay. Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session, SB 182, Senator Roblin, relating to professional development for educators.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 182 establishes the Educator Advancement Council, charged with duties related to distributing resources for professional learning supports for educators. The bill also sets in motion the planning and development of local educator networks, which will identify professional learning needs and of the educators in their area. Local networks should be able to leverage additional resources from local districts and other sources. During the first year of the 2017-19 biennium, the council and local networks will organize and begin planning their activities. During the second year, the local networks become eligible for received funds through the state programs such as mentoring. The statewide council will become more involved in prioritizing state spending for educator professional development starting in 2019-21. The Educator Advancement Council replaces the current network of quality teaching and learning. As the primary vehicle for guiding state-funded educator professional development, the council is required to report to the legislature by January 15, 2018 on its progress and planning. Senate Bill 182 also changes the biennial adjustments for the current carve-out of the state school fund for the network of quality teaching and learning. Currently, the adjustment is equal to the growth in the state school fund. This bill changes this to the inflation factor used by state agencies in developing their budgets. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Senate Bill 182 be amended by the A-9 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended. Just a few comments. I was on the group that started to plan this. I think that the office of the Chief Education Office is the best place for this to be housed. They were the ones that organized it last time. The first thing that's cut from every school budget is staff development. If you're in a large company or something else and you want to have new implementation, the thing you don't cut is training people. So I think it's an important thing to carve out because we do need to have the best trained teachers if we're going to have classroom sizes and other things the way we do. I'm pleased with the way this is working, and I will watch it very closely, especially the fact that we did give it an automatic increase. We cut it back from what would have been 14% to 3 or 4%, which I think is the right thing to do at this time. I hope that everybody can vote yes on 182.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment to in business, we do exit interviews, and dropout rate we have of new teachers in the first 4 years is an astounding And somehow I'd like to get them to be able to do an exit interview and send to us so we can read some of the real problems why they're leaving the profession.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
I will be the first to be a part of putting that up in front of the council because I think that's a great idea. We do some of it. I know as a principal, I did exit interviews with all of my teachers, and the one math teacher that I recruited from Southern California, who was an engineer at a pistachio deal, said, I can't afford to do this anymore. I'm heading back to my pistachio company. But there were a lot of other reasons. A lot of it has to do with, it's a really tough job when you have large classes and other kinds of things, and there's not as many supports. Many of them don't get mentors at the first, and they didn't realize kids were going to be the way they were when they first got in the classroom at 35. We need to do a better job of mentoring, and I think it is essential that we start doing surveys of every teacher that leaves. I think that was a great suggestion, so thank you.
Additional discussion? Senator Monroe?
Yeah, approximately 25% of new teachers wash out in the first 4 years. 25%. That is not only wasteful of human beings and many good teachers, but it's also very expensive because we help subsidize those, the education of those teachers. I was a young teacher, and I wish I'd have had a mentor. I wouldn't have struggled so much in my first year teaching. Representative Comp, who served with me as co-chairs of this subcommittee for a decade, and I pushed very hard to begin funding teacher mentors in this state. This continues that process.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. We will now go on to SB 1039 relating to ocean chemistry. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 1039 establishes the Oregon Coordinating Council on Ocean Acidification and Hypoxia. The Coordinating Council will be staffed by the Department of Fish and Wildlife and will submit a biannual report with recommendations to the Legislative Assembly and to the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, OPAC, by September 15th in even-numbered years. The Coordinating Council will take advantage of the expertise from the industry, academia, state agencies, and conservation groups to develop recommendations to address the devastating effects of ocean acidification and hypoxia. The Natural Resource Committee recommends 1039 be amended by the -1 amendment and to be reported out due pass as amended. This is a bill, and OPAC, which is our ocean policy group, endorsed this. So did the Science Trust. Our goal is to make Oregon the number one ocean acidification and hypoxia place in the world. We have weird ocean chemistry that makes us the epicenter for ocean acidification and hypoxia, and I urge your support.
Discussion of the motion before the committee?
Most of the same, yeah, okay. That's
any good. Objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close that work session, open a work session. SB 1062 relating to environmental conditions in school facilities, Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Ms. Jarrett. Nice to get these done early. Senate Bill 1062 establishes the Healthy School Facilities Fund and carves out, beginning on or after July 1, 2019, $2 million of state school funds from the existing facilities grant allocation to test and reduce exposure to elevated levels of lead in the water, lead-based paint, and installing carbon monoxide detectors. The bill has a $111,577 general fund impact to the Department of Education for one position, 0.5 FTE. In the 2017-19 biennium, the Education Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 1062 be amended by the -83 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Okay. Discussion of the motion before the committee? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session. I'm going to go back for a moment to the front of the page to 5521, Office of the Governor, Senator Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5521 is a budget bill for the Office of the Governor. The General Government Subcommittee approved a total budget of $27.6 million, including $13.5 million general funds and $3.8 million lottery funds and 59 positions, 58.50 FTE. The approved budget eliminates three vacant positions for a total savings of approximately $600,000 in lottery funds.
The bill also adds $7.1 million of expenditures in one position. The governor's office budget to reflect the transfer of the Oregon Commission on Voluntary Actions and Service from the House and Community Service Department to the governor's, to the office of the governor. The $6.9 million of federal funds added to this budget will be removed from the House and Community Service Department budget to properly reflect the transfer of the program. A $200,000 general fund appropriation is also provided to the governor to assist in the program transfer. The General Government Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5521 be amended by the Dash 1 Amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Senator Thompson.
Just have a question, Co-Chair. The Regional Solutions Program, is that normally been in the governor's budget? And is it still in there, or did they move it somewhere, or is it not funded this time around?
Let's get Mr. Bender to come forward just so we can get an answer on the record.
I'm Steve Bender, Legislative Fiscal Office. The Regional Solutions support staff is housed in the governor's office budget. It has been and continues to be so. Funding, when the legislature provides funding for projects, that project support goes through the Oregon Business Development Department budget.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Senator Thompson, Senator Girard. Seeing no others, motion carries. Stay on the same page. SB 100, Senator Frederick, relating to residential energy conservation for oil heated dwellings.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 100 transfers the state home oil weatherization program from the Department of Energy to the Housing and Community Services Department on January 1st, 2018. The bill also eliminates outdated references to the fuel oil dealer program. Other funds limitation is decreased in the Department of Energy and increased in the Housing and Community Services Department to reflect a transfer of the program. A program analyst, one position is established in the Housing and Community Services Department for administration of the program. The Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 100 be amended by the Dash A3 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Okay. Discussion of the motion before the committee.
Question.
Yes.
If they created a position in housing and it was shifted from energy, did they eliminate the position over there?
That's a good question. I don't have our analyst in here on that. We got this late.
Okay. Do you want to repeat your question?
Would you repeat that? Oh.
Well,
the question was whether they had eliminated a position in the energy department and creating a position in the housing and community services department.
So Amanda Beidle with the Legislative Fiscal Office, Mr. Chair and Senator Frederick, no, the Oregon Department of Energy was staffing that program with what they estimated to be approximately 0.27 of an FTE spread across five different positions. So it didn't make sense to reduce a piece of five different positions. We did establish a new position that was 0.88 in the Housing and Community Services Department. They're actually estimating that that will go down to about a half of an FTE for next biennium after they get the program started. And then, as you know, we're also, there's other legislation moving additional programs out of the Department of Energy. So I think when we come back in February to make those additional budget adjustments, there's the likelihood that there's some administrative savings that will be found at that time as far as overall staffing.
Okay. Any additional discussion?
Nope. Just wanted to note that for the record, when they come back in February, that there will be some additional adjustments.
Okay. Seeing no additional discussion, any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Open a work session. Back to the other side of the paper. To HB 2101, relating to public records, Representative Huffman. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2101 creates the Oregon Sunshine Committee to make recommendations to a new Legislative Council subcommittee regarding changes to public records laws. The Department of Justice will hire two staff to assist the Sunshine Committee with its reviews. In addition to reviewing the recommendations of the Sunshine Committee, the Legislative Council Subcommittee will review public records disclosure laws and rules at the request of the Legislative Assembly or a member of the public affected by the law or rule. Legislative Council will also require under this bill to prepare an open government's impact statement for the bills that affect disclosure or non-disclosure of public records. The General Government Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2101 be amended by the -A24 amendment and be reported out, do pass as amended.
Okay, discussion of the motion before the committee, Senator Johnson.
In subcommittee, we couldn't get the amendment drafted fast enough to change this to the Sunshine and Anti-Obfuscation Committee. from my perspective, it is not just looking at what documents are disclosed that should be in the public domain, but it ought to be an in-depth review of the mechanisms that agencies are employing to make it more difficult to get records. For example, having an attorney stand in the room and claim attorney-client privilege. And so I have been assured that that will be taken up by the committee. It isn't just pure records. It's also all of the mechanisms employed to get around it. I found it fascinating that somebody gave me a copy of a communications document that was requested under open records from OHA. And I have it with me. It's just page after page of redaction. On a communications plan. I don't know what's so secret about a communications plan, and I am offended that that agency continues to make it more difficult rather than less difficult to get information that is legitimately in the public domain into the public's hands.
Additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. I will go on to HB 2246 relating to high school graduation and college career readiness act. Representative Smith Warner, who is not here.
Can we just come back to it?
From the subcommittee.
You want me to do it? Well, came out of our subcommittee. I could do it. I've got it right here. Yet, or? I've got it right on my thing.
He's telling you he's intellectually and IT savvy.
No, as long as it's set up ahead of time.
That's not true.
I'm not buying that. I'm just not buying that. 1 minute.
No comments,
Co-chair.
Mr. Redfield.
I couldn't pass that.
I know. House Bill 2246 amends language in ballot measure 98. That establishes the high school graduation and college and career readiness fund, which provides additional funding to school districts for career and technical education, accelerated learning for high school students, and for dropout prevention. The bill changes the ballot measure's language in part to provide more flexibility to the school districts and other changes, including allowing smaller and medium-sized districts to spend grant funds in one or two of the three areas, depending on the amount of the annual grant. For districts receiving over $350,000 funds must be used in all three areas, allowing that up to 15% of the grant program funds may be used on behalf of eighth graders, changing the planning and assessment requirements on the use of the ballot measure funds, and changing the definition of chronic absenteeism. Your education subcommittee recommends House Bill 2246 be reported out, do pass.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes,
thank you.
Senator Robin.
I will be voting in favor of this bill because I do think we need to spend this money in these areas. They are very important. I am concerned that before the bill passed, everybody likes CTE, but we don't have enough CTE teachers. We don't have any university that provides and makes new CTE teachers in the state, but hopefully we'll get some in the future. And we have a bill that we need to extend the sunset next year because many of the CTE teachers are rehired people who came back to the profession because in rural areas we needed to find a teacher, and there was a retired person that was willing to come back, and so we gave permission for that. It sunsets next year. We better make sure that we pass that. I am also concerned that many of the CTE teachers that are in local rural areas right now will be lured away to larger school districts who have more money, and because the way this is written, the local school district cannot use it to supplant money, so they can't add to that person. They have to do something new. And I just want to watch this really closely as we implement this bill because I am concerned. But I will be a yes.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
I, too, will be a yes, and I share some of your same concerns. I also think we need to be vigilant with the Department of Education and how this works. When they set up the STEM hubs, there were supposed to be STEM hubs that affected all 36 counties. Well, they left out two of them, and one of them happened to be mine. When I went to complain, the answer was, well, whoops, things happen. That is unacceptable. And I am losing confidence so quickly in that agency's ability to hear the legislature and to respond as directed by us. So I hope that as we're watching the paucity of educators, we are also paying attention to equitable geographic distribution of these funds.
Yes.
I do want to make sure that I comment on Representative Smith-Warner's work to bring this together and to give more flexibility to this than was in the bill. I'm pleased that she did that. I think they could have gone a little bit farther personally. The big districts have to do all three, and places like Owen Sabin may have enough of the vocational programs, and it would be nice to spend it all on something else. The bill, as it's written, doesn't allow that for the larger school districts, but a lot was done, and I commend Smith-Warner and the work that they did in the House to get this bill where it is today.
Senator Frederick.
Thank you. I'm going to echo a number of things here, but I do need to say them because it is a concern. This particular bill has been a concern of mine, and frankly, 98 was a concern of mine. We did not have the money for it. We knew that. And the idea that suddenly we are now going to, we are going to be providing some money, but it is now, it is set up in a particular way. And frankly, I'm concerned that it's set up to fail. Because if you don't get certain things done, then there's a mechanism to create more problems for the district itself, not to necessarily support the district. It is not allowed to supplant the money for someplace like Sabin, Schoenberg, which is a mistake because they're getting cut anyway. There are some flexibility that I think is appropriate, and I'm pleased that we have some of that, but there should be a lot more, and I'm concerned about how the requirements are set up for the folks who are doing the work in CTE. It is a significant concern of mine.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. I will go on to HB 2355 relating to public safety. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 2355 requires the Criminal Justice Commission to develop and implement a standardized method of law enforcement officers to collect and record traffic stop data. CJC is to provide a report on the data by December 1st, 2019. The measure provides CJC with $347,351 in general funds for two permanent full-time positions to work on the data and analysis. The measure provides the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training with $433,330 other fund expenditure limitation for two permanent full-time positions to develop and train training procedures and to begin preliminary work on an education program to reduce profiling. The measure provides the Department of State Police with $780,418 general fund for three limited duration positions to work on developing and implementing a data collection system. This statewide data collection system is still in the preliminary phase, and actual costs of the system have not been determined. The Department of Transportation has $750,000 of the Federal National Highway Traffic Safety Administration Traffic Records Grant Funds that may be used to pay for statewide citation tracking system. The measure provides state police with other funds expenditure limitations in the amount of $750,000 to use these ODT funds for the project. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2355 as amended be reported out due pass. And colleagues, I might also add that there was a conversation of going forward with developing the system, that it was to make certain that the system did not have adverse impact on the counties and their participation in this. So, yes.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
That was a very thoughtful, Kerry, about the profiling part of this bill. Moving as fast as we're moving at the end of the session, I may have missed something. At one point, embedded in this bill was the decriminalization of small amounts, or amounts, I don't know how small they are, of heroin, cocaine, opiates, and methamphetamine. And you didn't discuss...
That wasn't in my opinion.
Well, I think it's an essential part of the bill. Profiling on its face, none of us find that acceptable. And so you have discussed a portion of a bill that if those reductions in the criminalization of the drugs that are the scourge in our community was left out of the pony, I don't know how the committee can be fully informed about what this bill has in it. And I wish to be associated with ending the odious practice of profiling, but I also wish not to be associated with decriminalizing the exact drugs that we have opined in this room, in this session, are the scourge of our community and are killing our kids. And to have that not in the pony causes me an enormous amount of concern. So maybe the professional staff can enlighten us as to how a material element of this bill got deleted. Maybe it's been amended out, and hallelujah if it has, because then I can support the bill. Otherwise, I do not want to be associated with decriminalizing opiates and heroin.
I see that Ms. Berker is there, and also I believe that there's somebody from the Department of Justice that is here.
Well, yes, there is.
Who yes, wants to come up?
Please come up, and then I do have some people in the queue also, and I'll get to those. So.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Aaron Knott. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Department of Justice. I do not ride the pony, so I don't have any substantive involvement in that. I can affirm that the bill, as I understand it, does contain drug sentencing reductions. Decriminalization is not the term I would use. It does reduce certain Class C felonies to a Class A misdemeanor, similar to the structure that is used in Oregon for driving under the influence of intoxicants, where for a first or second conviction, it would be a Class A misdemeanor, and then at that point, it would escalate to a Class C felony. This would not apply if a person had otherwise demonstrated their criminality via a prior felony conviction, nor would it apply if the amount of the drug possessed was substantial. Those levels are allocated in the bill. That's an overview.
Follow. Well, then help explain for me, Mr. Knott, what effect this would have on drug court. I have spoken at graduations of drug court. I have witnessed the success of drug court. If I am involved in a felony, I have a motivation to go to drug court, and if the potential consequence is a felony. If it's just a misdemeanor, and why would I want to go through the rigors of drug court? What effect do you think this will have on our ability to sustain efficacious drug courts if these now become misdemeanors?
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, and Senator Johnson, first of all, the funding provision, as you are aware, funding normally for a felony conviction goes through the state, whereas for misdemeanors it would go through the county. There's a provision in 2355A that modifies that, makes an exception for drugs, to keep funding constant the way it is now. In terms of the incentive structure, which I think is the other half of your question, I would note that we have widespread misdemeanor courts functioning in the state right now, the most obvious of which would be those applicable to DUII. Typically, DUII is a Class A misdemeanor, and as a matter of statute, there are diversion options available in all counties. They have widespread participation, despite the fact that there is not a felony available as an incentive.
I would just respond that it's a hell of a motivator to not have a DUII on one's record with respect to the cost of soaring insurance after a conviction.
I'll go to the next people. First, Representative Huffman, then Senator Frederick. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get on the record that Kevin Campbell submitted testimony in our subcommittee stating that the police chiefs and sheriffs were in support of 2355.
Okay. Senator Frederick.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are several things. I want to repeat what Representative Huffman said. It was quite an extraordinary effort for the police chiefs and sheriffs to come forward to say that they thought this would be a very effective way of dealing with some of the issues that they struggle with, especially not only the drug issues, but also the issues related to disparate treatment in terms of minorities and other folks regarding drugs. They were very pleased with this particular thing and came forward in news conferences, et cetera, to speak to it. But there's an underlying issue here that I think is important. This, a number of these aspects attempt to regain the credibility that we've had for a number of my people in different communities. In many cases in my community, there's a sense of being under siege. And the profiling is part of that, but so is the identifying small amounts of marijuana or small amounts of drugs as a way to create a legal limbo for people as a result of these kinds of things. And sometimes that is that creates its own problems. I'm very pleased to see this go for the first two. Let me emphasize that. The first two situations regarding drugs are misdemeanors. After that, we're talking about a felony, and I think that has a greater impact on the community, on families, and on the people themselves in a way that I think is important. I'm very pleased with this. It is something that I've been pushing for quite a while. Thank you.
Senator Winters.
I'd like to read for the record because I found in my notes, and it is from the chiefs and the sheriffs. Excerpt, we believe that House Bill 2355 is a carefully crafted measure that reduces penalties for possession of user amounts of dangerous drugs, PCS, from a felony to an A misdemeanor crime for the first two convictions with a DA option on a third charge. We have been clear that we believe this policy will only produce positive results if additional drug treatment resources accompany this change in policy. Reducing penalties without aggressively addressing underlying addiction is unlikely to help those who need it most and may result in other negative impacts. I might also add that I know that there are some counties who are currently doing this already. And this was brought to my attention by both my sheriff and my district attorney some time ago, before I think we even came into session, when they were contemplating this particular action. So that is for the record that the sheriffs, and then going back and the chiefs, And embodied in this is also with that one I talked about, that we don't shift costs, both for the putting together the data system and collection system and that IT piece to the counties, as well as that we assure that we do have treatment resources that are available to the counties so that these individuals can be treated and assisted. And so that's what I know for the record.
Okay.
Additional discussion of the motion before the committee. Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Johnson expressed concern that the part about changing the penalty for possession of a controlled substance for personal use wasn't in the pony. And it occurs to me to wonder whether we really, in the committee, we primarily consider the profiling piece because that's the part that has a fiscal. And I don't know what the tradition is in LFO, whether what's in the pony is only the part that has the fiscal or whether it's all the policy in the bill. And perhaps it would be helpful to other committee members to hear from LFO about whether when ponies are prepared, they focus on the part that has a fiscal. Because the misdemeanor, the switch to the misdemeanor part, to the best of my understanding, doesn't actually have a fiscal. So it would have been logical to not include that since this isn't a policy committee, it's a budget committee. I'm curious, and I'd like to understand it a little bit better.
Additional discussion.
Well, can I get my question answered, Mr.
Yes,
Chair?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, LFO, of course, are not policy experts. Bills come to LFO in ways and means to talk about the fiscal impact, so our ponies generally are reflecting the cost of the bill, not all of the policy aspects, which we are not experts in.
Thank you.
Representative McClain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote no on this bill. And join the remarks of Senator Johnson. I'm not prepared, based upon the information I have before me, to say that possession of meth, I just glanced at this and it's 2 grams or less, or possession of heroin is a misdemeanor. You know, wasn't too long ago, I think, you know, we elevated to felony, kicking the family dog in front of a kid, which I don't condone. But, you know, when you start looking at culpability without further thought, and I reserve to look at this further, it seems to lower the sanction to a misdemeanor, given the scourge, at least in my district, with meth and heroin. I am just not prepared to do it this time. I have no comment on the pony, except it certainly was surprising to see something as material as a 40-50-year, 60-year policy change of the state of Oregon would be omitted in a pony. I find that quite surprising.
Any additional discussion? Senator Johnson.
I would just comment that I'm pleased that we give so much credence to the chiefs and sheriffs with respect to this bill. I hope we pay the same attention to their opposition to House Bill 3078.
I hope not, but anyway.
Senator Winters.
As a society, and I just, you know, I go back, you know, we passed marijuana, and now we figured out how to really make it work because we enjoy the revenue that comes from that in order to actually take care of schools and other things. The debate and the discussion across this country as it relates to the use of opioids and others, and I think if one keeps up with the debate across this country, there is empirical evidence that there are certain things that follow race. I was not going to, but, you know, it was opened a little bit by the good colleague from the senator, and that's a fact. And I don't know whether it was a part of the policy discussion or not. But if you look at the disparity in our prisons across this country, and not just in Oregon, you're going to find that this disparity is also tied to some of the very issues that we're talking about in these utilizations of opioids and what have you. There is a real distinction in who uses what drugs out there in our society. I will leave it at that. But all you have to do is follow the national stats, look at some of the discussions that's going on across this country, and why nationally there has been a change in how we unschedule some of these. And so it's very interesting because we don't like to talk about the whole issue in this state and others about the disparity and what the numbers look like in our prison systems. And it is a reality. And it has been for years. And it is tied to everything from drug use to profiling, and we can even now, and I've been raising this question in this body, for not just now, and it's not just this issue, but we can take our systems everywhere from foster care to OYA all the way into DOC. And you will find that disparity. We cannot sit here and talk about these issues with not the reality that it is institutional racism. And we cannot do this stuff in isolation. So, you know, we can pretend that it doesn't exist, but it does. And those of you who want to go online, the good thing about Google and all of that is that instantly we can get national information, and all we have to do is plug in what we want to understand and know. And the issue of disparity across this country and the issue of the drug utilization, and you can take it back from the time that it was said, we will provide this in one part of our communities and something else in our other. So I rest my case, and I'm not a DA, and I'm not a legal person. But I can tell you from a community person who have watched this over the years, it is a fact and a reality. And Oregon is not exempt from it.
Additional discussion. Seeing no additional discussion, Mr. Rocco, will you call the roll?
Representative Wisner.
No.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
No.
Representative Williamson?
Aye.
Representative Gomberg?
Aye.
Representative Smith Warner?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Smith?
No.
Co-Chair Nathanson?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
No.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Steiner Hayward?
Aye.
Senator Hansel?
Aye.
Senator Roblin?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes.
Senator Manning?
Aye.
Senator DeBoer?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Winters?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Co-Chair Devlin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion carries. Close that work session. Before we go on to the next item, I would like to note for the record, we all know that we have ponies that are for budgets, and some of those budgets are 30 and 40 pages long. We do ponies also for policy bills, but those we also have in our possession the staff measure summaries from the policy committees. So LFO is largely commenting on the financial impacts of bills, but the other information should be available to us. I'm going to go on to two or three more items, and then we have to check how much is online. So we'll take a short pause. I'll go on to HB 2729, relating to open educational resources at post-secondary institutions of education. Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Honorable colleagues, House Bill 2729 provides a $1 million appropriation to Higher Education Coordinating Commission for Oregon's Open Education Resources Program, OER. It's actually free textbooks. And the following contracted activities: convening a work group of faculty, staff, and librarians from public universities and community colleges, as well as contracting for a statewide OER coordinator for the purposes of coordinating the OER program. They'll be hosting an OER symposium. Determining if statewide repository of OER material should be developed, and if so, developing a plan for the creation of the repository. providing up to $150,000 in grants to public universities and community colleges for the creation, adoption, and implementation of OER materials. Then they'll provide a report on the OER program to the Legislative Assembly in odd number of years, including content on the current status of the OER program, calculations of money current and future students saved as a result of the program, and an evaluation of barriers preventing the adoption of OER materials. Colleagues, last session, we passed a bill to establish this program. We authorized $700,000 to create 15 textbooks. Those textbooks were created, and this bill now establishes an ongoing program to help reduce the cost of textbooks for higher education students. The Education Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2729 be amended by the A4 amendment and reported out due pass as amended. Thank you.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session. HB 2763, Representative Wisnant, relating to teachers.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. All of our colleagues, House Bill 2763 appropriates $1.7 million general fund to the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission for a deposit into the National Board Certification Fund. Roughly $1.6 million of this appropriation will provide reimbursements to 150 teachers seeking or obtaining National Board certification, including costs related to participating in a cohort for certification. Committee members, Oregon has 1% of its teachers are National Board certified. Washington has 15%. North Carolina has 21%. This bill directs TSPC to waive the renewal fee for educator license of educators who are certified by a national professional organization for teaching standards recognized by the TSPC. TSPC will retain $142,814 of the funding and the 17-19 biennium for one limited duration administrative specialist to process reimbursements and prepare a report to the Legislative Assembly, which will address National Board certification outcomes and statistics, as well as identifying funding levels necessary to increase the number of teachers holding National Board certifications in the state to a 10%. Our goal is 10% of all public school teachers. My compliments and the Representative Smith Warner worked hard on this with me, and the Teacher Standards and Practice Director, and it's a good program to help the quality of our teachers. Thank you very much. The Education Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2763 be amended by the A6 amendments and be reported out due pass as amended. Thank you.
Okay, discussion of the motion before the committee?
Yes.
Yes, Senator Frederick.
Thank you. We were just talking about teachers. This also provides an incredible motivation for teachers to feel as though they're being appreciated as professionals, and that I think will also help us to hang on to the newer teachers as they begin their careers, because they see a place that they can go and they'll see that they're being supported. It's not supported necessarily via money. It's supported that they're being recognized as professionals. This is an important factor for us to really be effective in education in Oregon. So I thank you for this.
Additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. We'll go on to HB 3361 relating to open data standards. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, colleagues. House Bill 3361 establishes the position of state data officer appointed by the state chief information officer to develop and maintain a web portal for state agencies to release all publishable data. The officer will establish an open data standard, publish a technical standards manual, create an inventory of publicly available state data, and suggest analytical opportunities for state agencies. The Office of the Chief Information Officer will leverage the existing transparency website infrastructure to comply with this bill. Funding for this bill includes money for the Chief Data Officer, as well as monies to add capacity to the state's open data portal. The General Government Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3361 be amended by the -A18 amendment and reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Colleagues, we've had a few more items being posted, so I'll keep going.
SB 5533 for Oregon Health Science University debt. Senator Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5533 establishes the following amounts in the Department of Administrative Services budget to make debut service payments on bonds issued for the benefit of the Oregon Health Science University. $26.1 million general fund for debt service on outstanding Article 11Q bond, or excuse me, Article 11G bonds issued for the OHSU Knight Cancer Institute. $30.1 million other funds limitation for debt service on the Oregon Opportunity bonds that are repaid with Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement funds, and $7.9 million other funds limitation for debt service on legacy Article 11F bonds supported from OHSU revenues. Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5533 be reported out to pass.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. I'll close that work session. I'm going to go back to page two. Go to HB 2687 relating to emergency preparedness. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 2687 establishes the Resiliency Grant Fund capitalized with proceeds from Article 11Q bonds and creates a grant program in the Office of Emergency Management to distribute or provide grants to purchase emergency equipment at the local level. The bill directs the Homeland Security Council to develop a list of needed equipment and exempts equipment acquisition from the public contracting code. The Office of Emergency Management must maintain an inventory and conduct inspections of equipment purchase under the program. The recommended amendment removes bond authorization language from the bill. Bond authorizations are made under Senate Bill 5506. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends HB 2687 be amended by the Dash 1 Amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. A question. Was there any discussion in committee about limiting whether one municipality or jurisdiction or unit of government can come back multiple times, or how to assure geographic equity? A cap on how much could be spent in one place for one piece of equipment?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'd have to call up staff to see if anything was mentioned in the sub.
Ms. Naburka, please come.
My reason
in the policy committee. I wasn't on that policy committee, so I do not know the answer to that question.
My reason for asking is that some of this equipment is incredibly expensive. A big generator, like to power a fire station, $8,000, and that's used.
But well needed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I'm Julie Naburka from the Legislative Fiscal Office. We heard in the subcommittee from the Oregon Military Department, at a very high level, how they would administer the grant program. It, of course, has not been created yet. There's, as I understand it, an established list of a federal government list of the kind of approved emergency response equipment that communities ought to have. I think it's 750 items long, and they recommended using that as kind of a starting point for what sorts of equipment would fall under the program.
I would hope the military department could use their ability to access federal surplus to get us equipment that perhaps is returning from the Middle East or some places where it could be put to beneficial civilian use. Again, I go back to generators. The lesson we learned from the coast was that when there is some kind of a warning, it drives people inland, and those inland communities better be ready to accept a lot of people that are ill-equipped to be in the coast range in the winter, going to the Elsie Vine Maple fire station with no lights or heat. And so it's badly needed. I very much support the bill, but I hope the military department can use their buying capacity to access federal stuff, too.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of my sons is an emergency operations director, and he will be accessing this fund, so I want to get that on the record.
Senator Robin.
There have been some unique things that counties have done. Lincoln County, for example, is setting up these caches around the area to make sure that it's possible. They have done it in a unique way in saying we'll put up 2,000 if the local committee puts up 2,000. It has spread it out. There are a lot of caches now being formed around Lincoln County. I hope that they'll look at some of the programs that counties have already started doing to prepare for this so that they can gain from that experience and maybe do some of the same kinds of things. And I just want to put that on record. We do have a little bill that has to do with putting together a task force of these rural fire departments that are on these roads that connect so that we can get together and have a conversation, because we've had a couple events where those roads have become parking lots and they don't have hotels, and we need to be able to figure out how to deal with those new people in our communities. And I think what Senator Johnson was saying was really important, and I hope that we can make sure that this money and those things are all done in cooperation with each other.
Additional discussion?
Yes, Senator Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hoped at some point to find a way to put containers, shipping containers, at every school that would have caches of this kind of material available. We tried to do that. There was a tax credit, and given the tax credit issues this year, it didn't get very far. But it's something that I think is a possibility of for not just the tsunami or the large earthquake, but even some of the major fires. If we could get those kinds of things in every neighborhood in the school, I think that would be helpful. So it's something I want you to think about. I'll be back sometime to talk about it. Thank you.
Additional discussion? Any objections? Motion before the committee. Seeing none, motion carries. I will go on to HB 3149 relating to Oregon Coast Trail. Representative Gomber.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I'm very pleased to present House Bill 3149, which makes several declarations regarding the Oregon Coast Trail system and requires the Oregon Department of Parks and Recreation to, in cooperation with the Oregon Department of Transportation and other entities, develop an action plan to complete the trail. The measure further directs the parks to identify and address several significant items to be considered in the plan and submit annual progress reports on the development and implementation of the plan to the Legislative Assembly. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3149 be amended by the -A5 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. I will go on to HB 3359 relating to long-term care. Representative Rayfield.
House Bill 3359 includes several requirements related to safety, quality, training, licensing, and staffing of residential care facilities, long-term care facilities, and adult foster homes licensed by the Department of Human Services. The bill establishes a residential care quality measurement program within DHS and creates a quality measurement council to advise the agency regarding program operations. Increased workload for DHS is related to licensing condition chart changes. Collecting quality data and developing training, supporting the council, operating the enhanced oversight and supervision program, and implementation of and compliance with the new staffing tool. The recommended amendment adds $1.3 million other funds expenditure limitation and $1.3 million federal funds expenditure limitation, which will support the program and workload, including 10 positions. The other funds come with licensing fees, civil penalties that accrue to the Quality Care Fund. Changes under the bill are expected to increase that revenue stream. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3359 be amended by the -6 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Senator Hansel.
This is on the long-term care, right?
Yes.
I'd like to declare a potential future conflict of interest.
I would like Representative Rayfield thinks all of us on this side of the dais need to do that.
There are exceptions on the House side, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, in Capital Construction, you had a similar comment. But anyway, in Capital Construction earlier this afternoon, we had Phil Bentley in representing OCCA, this has been a package put together by a lot of partners, so it seems like a good bill.
Any additional discussion? Senator Roblin.
So part of this came out, Representative McEwen and I had some problems with a few carriers in the Coos Bay area, and it got us kind of lit on fire with respect to kind of things, and out of that came long discussions here, and finally, final agreement. I'm pretty pleased we're where we are right now, and hope that we can pass this bill and make these places safer and better for all of us as we get ready.
Senator Johnson, do you wish to declare conflict of interest?
No, I don't. Jerk. I mean, co-chair jerk.
Jerky, it's not you anymore.
No, I told you, the annulment and divorce is in process.
Dead man. Okay. My comment was, I think this is a great bill. It will remain to DHS to enforce this. Yep. If we have a lot of reports that go unheeded and abuses continue or bad behavior continues, it will all be for naught. So I think we need to remain vigilant that if there are problems, that they're dealt with and expeditiously.
Additional discussion? Any objections to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. I'll close that work session. We have a new item posted, SB 505, relating to recording of grand jury proceedings. Representative Williamson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, Senate Bill 505 requires county district attorneys to electronically record all grand jury proceedings and to store and maintain copies of the audio recording. The measure provides for a phase-in implementation with Deschutes, Multnomah, and Jackson counties beginning to record grand jury proceedings on March 1st, 2018, and all other counties in the state beginning on July 1st, 2019. The measure requires district attorneys to delegate recording and instruction to a grand juror and to use the type of audio electronic recording device provided and maintained by the Judicial Department. Much of the cost of the measure are indeterminate and will depend on the number of protective orders and preliminary hearings requested. Potentially impacted agencies include the courts, district attorneys, Department of Justice, Public Defense Services Commission, counties, and cities. Due to the indeterminate nature, the measure sets aside $8.5 million of general fund and a special purpose appropriation to the emergency board, from which affected entities may request funds to carry out the provisions of the measure. Additionally, $1.5 million general fund is provided to the Judicial Department to provide funding for recording equipment and court costs in the early implementing counties only. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 505 be amended by the A13 amendment and be reported at due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Don't disagree.
Deschutes County is one of the pilot counties, and I put on the record earlier, I talked to the Chief Justice, and Deschutes County was actually number 3 in the list of 9 requested judges in House Bill 26-something and 2605. We funded 2 of those positions, Josephine and Washington counties. Deschutes County was number 3. And I just want to get on the record that I'm encouraging the chief and the county, if the pilot warrants another judge position because of preliminary hearings or something due to the grand jury recordation, that they feel free to... That they feel free to come to the e-board and request, make their plea for that additional judgeship.
Okay. Senator Johnson and Representative Wisnett.
I have a whole series of questions, and so with your leave, I would allow others to go first.
Okay.
And
if then I'll go back to Wisnett, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'd just like to put on the record that I had a lot of concern and reviewed this issue. I'm deferring to my district attorney who wants to be part of the test program, so I'll be a yes on 505.
Okay. And Senator Winters.
And thank you. And I would just join my good representative in his request. We only had the funding for availability for 2 judges, but I knew that they were in position number 3. And should, you know, the fund becomes available for a 3rd judge, I would actually recommend that we add Deschutes. Not only for their willingness to actually be a part of the pilot, but also they also have showed some willingness and wanting to be a part of 416 as well. So just keep that in consideration when we're talking about judgeships.
Okay. Senator Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just one Just one request. I've been getting some feedback from my district attorney. Is there a provision in there where we would get some kind of feedback report about the progress and how the program is advancing?
Yes, sir. Mr. Bender, why don't you come forward?
Probably the committee and Bender, too.
Steve Bender, Legislative Fiscal Office. Senator, the bill itself requires two reports. The first report will be to the November 2018 Emergency Board. As you know, this bill also provides a $8.5 million special purpose appropriation of the Emergency Board. And although the Emergency Board could allocate before that particular meeting, I think it's expected that at that particular meeting there will be the report and potentially requests for additional funds out of the $8.5 million. And a second report is also required before the start of the 2019 session, because there will be some more time that the recording requirement hasn't been in place in the three early adopter counties.
Senator Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'll be a no vote on this. I've had on several occasions DAs travel from my district here to Salem to urge me to vote no on this bill. I don't have a single DA in that northeast central region that is supportive of this, and I'll be a no vote.
Okay. Anyone else before I go to us, Senator Johnson, which is what you requested?
Yes,
Senator Johnson.
Several questions with the chair's patience. Was it discussed in committee at all about the effect on the court system if more DAs move to preliminary hearings versus grand jury, and the possibility that that could completely clog up courts?
Representative Williamson, do you?
I was not in the subcommittee, so I don't know what was discussed in the subcommittee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I brought that up on the record to get the response. Some DAs think that, well, my Wasco County DA told me yesterday that he's going to move to all preliminary hearings. My Deschutes County DA said he will continue doing no preliminary hearings. So I think that's the reason for having the pilot program in three different counties to see how it plays out.
Okay. If I might add to that, I've had a number of discussions. The three preliminary counties, Multnomah County is saying, I believe, 80 to 85% switch to preliminary hearings. Lane is saying 20 or 25% preliminary hearings. And Deschutes is saying zero switching to preliminary hearings. So.
Okay. Was there any discussion in committee about other states that require district attorney's offices to maintain and store the grand jury records? And the subset of that is, if something happens to the records, is there a concomitant liability for the county if the record is mishandled in some significant way, or even a little way?
Mr. Chair,
I don't believe that we did have that discussion in the sub about the what would happen if a record was destroyed. I think we did have the discussion about the keepers of the record. But not go so far as to what happens if it is destroyed.
Well, a follow-up question then would be that I understand that the courts will be purchasing the recording equipment and the maintenance agreements. Having been a grand juror, and actually a former of a grand jury, who will be tasked with the daily upkeep of the recording equipment? Who's going to pay for that? And is it standardized? Will every courtroom have the ACME recording system, or how will that work?
Mr. Bender, can you comment on that?
Our understanding is that the Judicial Department will be purchasing the equipment and do intend to purchase the same equipment for all counties. The counties will have, the district attorneys will have possession of the recording equipment, and I think that any daily costs incurred for storing that or whatever would be the responsibility of the district attorneys, although the equipment would be provided at state expense.
Okay.
Okay. ACME will be happy to hear that. Was there any discussion about any other states that require grand jurors to be responsible for operating the recording equipment?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Senator Johnson, I had a lot of offline conversations, and I honestly don't remember which conversations were online or offline, but I know that other states are using a couple of different models of equipment that's out on the market, and I am told by other states that it's simple to teach a juror to come and hit play and stop.
They now, get an M&M.
I don't want to oversimplify, but that's the way it came across, that it's not brain surgery.
Okay. I got a couple more with the chair's indulgence. Let me preface this by saying I would, as these pilot programs metastasize, I would invite people to the Tillamook County Courthouse or the Columbia County Courthouse. In Columbia County, the grand jury room is also the lunchroom, also the law library, a fat spot in a hallway with some extra chairs. So I'm curious about some of these courthouses that don't have proper facilities, and what does a county do if they can't afford to implement the policy? Can they opt out? I mean, I know it's a pilot to begin with, but what happens if counties don't want to participate?
Does either of the members here?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there were actually several questions in that one question. The equipment that is being considered as portable, because Wasco County is a prime example that if this is expanded into all the counties eventually, sometimes a judge needs the jury room, and so they have to move downstairs in another room, so it's designed to be portable in nature. The ongoing expenses, that's something that I have brought up as a concern, because I don't want to start a program. And again, I think that's what the pilots are going to determine. And I was told to consider that DAs have some expenses now, and so some of the expenses will just translate into the new system. They already have to provide defense with certain documents, and so that is a current expense. A
couple more questions. Is there any question about unequal justice in those counties that have this recording and all of the concomitant concerns about it being, you know, the recording is getting out to defense attorneys and being set up online and shaming victims? Is there any question, or was it discussed at all, about the possibility of unequal justice from the three counties that are now subject to this pilot?
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the first question, Representative Johnson, the reason it's a phase-in is to deal with any constitutional issues as opposed to a pilot. So because it's coming online slowly, but the intent is that it goes to all 36 counties, it takes care of any sort of constitutional questions. To the second part of your comment, it lays out pretty clearly in the bill about when, if ever, a transcript or a recording can become public. And it can only become public in the case of a public servant, in which a judge allows through a hearing process, allows that to be public. So the idea that it would be online to shame victims means that somebody who had possession of that record did something that was illegal.
Okay. Two more questions. You mentioned the cost as the pilot rolls out into all 36 counties. We have $8+ million for three counties. Have we contemplated the total cost for all 36 of Oregon's counties?
I can address that too, Mr. Co-Chair. That 8.5 is set aside in a special appropriation,
right, I heard
as
that.
As a backdrop, because we don't know. So as you heard earlier, it depends on the district attorney and what their intention is around implementing this, how much it will cost. So our hope is that in February of 18, that will be a month before even the pilots go online. So we'll have a report out in the fall. We'll be back here in February of 18, and then we'll be back a report before the 19 session and a report during the 19 session before everybody goes live on July 1st of 19. So we've got 4 or 5 points at which there will be reporting out to the legislature to make tweaks in the process if there are policy issues, and in the budgeting if there are budgeting issues. So the intent is to have lots of lead time to address issues as they come up with the three counties.
One last comment. I have heard varying things about what Idaho does, and so as a result, I'm in possession of an email from a senior prosecutor in one of the larger counties in Idaho. They indicate that they have no recordings, that they have a court reporter furnished and paid for by the district court. And so I was just curious about what was discussed with respect to Idaho. I'm just hearing hallway gossip.
In House Judiciary in 2015 was the last time I heard any testimony on what any other states did, so I don't know if someone here has heard. I think that if I remember the conversation, it was that it was transcribed. So it's not a live recording there, but it's transcribed by a court reporter. But the transcript is nonetheless then shared with the defense, if I remember correctly. But like I said, that was...
And last but not least, in Twin Falls, they've gone to 95% preliminary hearings, 5% grand juries.
Additional comments? Okay. Just for the record, I wanted to get a couple of personal comments on the record. One, I have never actually been an opponent of recording, but I have not necessarily been a reporter. It depends upon the process itself. And, of course, a lot of the debate has been about what testimony could be hearsay versus non-hearsay. And the proponents of this legislation, the member proponents of the legislature, have put into this bill one provision that I particularly wanted to see in the bill, and that is that victims under 18 years of age will be there from on hearsay. They do not have to be in person. I think that is particularly important for young victims of sexual abuse and young rape victims also, even actually young domestic violence victims, because there are 16 and 17-year-old domestic violence victims. But the other thing I was going to say about this, just so that people know what they're voting on, is that this is a pilot for this biennium, but the rest of the counties go online by the statute that you are passing. It is simply a process where we will do these three counties and then the other counties will come online. I do believe the period in which we are doing the three counties will give us some clear indication in terms of how many district attorneys move more to preliminary hearings, what the impact might be on indigent defense, whether there are any other issues that the legislature should address. And I just wanted to put that on the record. I still have concerns about the bill. I will be a yes here, but that is not a courtesy vote. I will be a yes. So any additional discussion? Senator Roblin.
I just want to associate myself with the last comments made by the co-chair.
Okay, additional discussion.
And I want to make the same, because the co-chair said for 18-year-olds like myself.
I do not have an elder abuse provision.
Stop it, you two.
Ms. Rocco, will you call the roll?
Representative Wisner?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative McLean?
No.
Representative Williamson?
Yes.
Representative Gombert?
Yes.
Representative Smith-Warner?
Yes.
Representative Holvey?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Smith?
I have to be a no. A no.
No?
I mean, no.
Co-Chair Nathanson?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Steiner Hayward?
Aye.
Senator Hansel?
No.
Senator Roblin?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes.
Senator Manning?
Aye.
Senator DeBoer?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Winters?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Co-Chair Devlin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. We have a few more items that have come online. One really short, SB 235 relating to public health. Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To SB 235 of the -B10 amendment amends the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act by allowing use of tobacco products in an enclosed area that is outdoors. The amendment restores the bill to what the Senate originally passed and removes all new licensing and regulatory requirements that are included in the B engrossed version. The fiscal impact is minimal. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends SB 235 be amended by the -B10 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Okay. Discussion of the motion before the committee. Representative McLean.
I'm just, you know, for those of us who haven't had a chance to get a lot of information on the bill, Mr. Chair, I just, if we could pause.
Okay.
May I help, Mr. Chair?
Since I carried this bill. Representative McLean was asking to speak to the member next to him, if that was okay.
Oh, that's
fine.
You know what?
I'm at 7 o'clock on a Saturday. I am a courtesy yes, and I'll learn more before we get to the
okay.
floor. How's that?
Okay. Any additional discussion? Any objections to the motion before the committee? Motion carries. Okay, we will go on to SB 512.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
From the first of the page, which is relating to parentage, and it's back to Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you. SB 512 establishes parentage based on the presumption that the spouse of a birth mother is a parent to her child. This extends the current marital presumption to include same-sex spouses of birth mothers, providing a basis for parentage for purposes of child support. The bill also updates paternity and parentage language to be gender neutral. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means previously approved this bill, and it has passed the Senate. The B5 conflict amendment resolves conflict with SB 513 and House Bill 2673. In both these bills, updated parentage language is already included. We recommend Senate Bill 512 be amended by the dash B5 conflict amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Please note Senator Girard, Senator Huff, or Representative Huffman. Motion carries. I will go on to HB 2795 on the second page relating to fees. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. HB 2795 changes identified court fees and the percentage of court fee revenue that the Judicial Department retains for deposit into the State Court Technology Fund from 4.75 to 8.85. The bill increases most court filing fees by approximately 5% over current levels. These changes will provide $2.9 million in additional revenues to the Judicial Department to use for technology services. General fund revenues from court filing fees are not adversely affected. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2795 be amended by the dash 5. Amend it and be reported out to pass. And I might add, and I want to thank the judicial and the stakeholders in working together on this FIBA.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objections to the motion before the committee? Please note, Senator.
No, not an objection. I just have a question.
Okay, I won't. I'll hold up discussion for just a second. Senator Johnson.
Is this a revenue bill?
It's a fee bill.
Yeah, but does it, Mr. Bender's answering my question. What I asked inartfully is it's a majority vote on the floors.
Three-fifths.
Can you have Mr. Bender come forward?
Three-fifths.
Yes.
No.
No, now no. It's not.
No.
Mr. Bender, will you come
no.
forward because no, our not. Record says yes, no.
You told us in committee.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Senator, committee members, yes. It does require a three-fifths
Mr. Bender,
majority.
Please identify
houses.
Yourself.
Yes, Steve yes. Bender, Legislative Fiscal.
And it does require
it does
three-fifths.
Require three-fifths?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to get it clear on the record.
This was right.
Okay. Is there any additional discussion on this item? Anyone opposed to the motion? Senator Girard. Seeing no others, motion carries. We have completed the second page completely, and we're going back to the front page. These should be posted now. I will go to SB 5536, the Secretary of State's budget, Senator Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5536 is the budget bill for the Secretary of State. The Secretary is the Auditor of Public Accounts, Chief Elections Officer, and Manager of State's Records. The agency also registered business entities and secured personal property transactions, commissions notary publics, and published administrative rules. The approved budget totals $73.8 million and 212 positions. It maintains the critical staffing level in the agency's Information Services Division that support election division systems and include 250,000 other funds for IT security enhancement. The budget also continues payments to counties to assist in costs incurred from the motor voter program. Other components of the budget continue operation of the new Elections Night reporting system and the printing of paper editions of the Oregon Blue Book. The General Government Subcommittee recommends SB 5536 be amended by the Dash 1 amendment and be reported out to pass as amended.
Got any samples?
Okay. Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. We will go on to SB 5539, Tobacco Settlement Fund Account. Senator Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5539 authorizes the transfer of tobacco master settlement agreement funds. Revenues received by Oregon resulting from the master settlement agreement between major tobacco companies in 46 states reached in 1998 are deposited to the Tobacco Settlement Fund account. Based on this bill, a total of $172.3 million will be transferred to the fund debt service on OHSU bonds, the Oregon Health Plan and Community Mental Health Programs, and physical education-related grants. The Oregon Fund's expenditure limitation for these revenues are contained in agency budget bills or the end-of-session budget bills. Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5531 be amended by the Dash 1 amendment and reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Representative McLean.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that this transfers a lot of money, 170-some million, is that right, to the OHA? And with not a lot of clarity, there is meaning that it's there's some fungibility to it with regards to their budget in the OHP, and again, that's my understanding because I haven't had a lot of information. So I should ask that if that's true, because. In second follow-up is since this is tobacco settlement money, I've consistently voted no on these appropriations because they seldom are used for the intended purpose. I'm just shocked that Oregon hasn't been sued yet for using this as fungible, flexible general fund dollars when it was part of a litigation settlement. But how much accountability over the OHA? In other words, can the OHA use this money from the tobacco settlement for purposes of OHP payments for people who aren't otherwise a part of OHP today?
Mr. Chair, Linda Ames with Legislative Fiscal Office. The $154.8 million of this goes to the Oregon Health Plan budget. It is used for standard purposes of the Oregon Health Plan budget, just like general fund, hospital provider tax, and tobacco tax revenues are used. It funds all the different pieces of the Oregon Health Plan.
All right. Well, Mr. Chair, that's the reason I'm a no, is because that's called fungible dollars. Because that sure sounded like general fund dollars being appropriated to the OHA. I just think that is inconsistent with some of the, I don't think that's consistent with how we acquired the tobacco settlement money. And so, I'll be a no. But, Mr. Chair, I'm used to you responding whenever I speak up in Ways and Means with more information or subtle rebuke, so I'm open to whatever you got for me.
Or not so subtle rebuke.
Representative McLean, I would be happy to talk to you anytime, actually, but I don't have a rebuke for you. I understand your comment. I respect your comment.
No follow-up to me, Mr. Chair, today?
It's getting late, you guys.
Come on, let's go.
No, well, I will not. Well, you almost, actually. The issue I would have, actually, to be honest, is I think some people would think that this is okay as long as it's going to health care. However, the underlying litigation was the actual costs people were experiencing in health care related to tobacco-related illnesses. So there is probably a legitimate issue there, because health care seems to suffice for some interests, and other interests say, are we actually spending it on tobacco-related illnesses, which actually is a fairly major portion of our health care costs. But
well, I'll give you, Mr. Chair, a good follow-up to that is Cover All Kids, which has friends sponsoring it, and it is there are people with legitimate reasons to support that bill and legitimate reasons to oppose that bill. But when you pour in a bunch of fungibility into an OHA budget and then you appropriate out of that budget an expansion, you know, that has a lot of issues to it. You know, there is some tracing issues there of mixture. And so that's just one example of where I would say the settlement is not being true, but I'm just going on record. Every time this comes up, I just am surprised with the state of Oregon's ability to escape accountability with that tobacco settlement. And we're using it like general fund dollars, and I, for one, just don't think that's how we got the money. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be a no.
Senator Roman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was a little despondent by the carry, because Senator Girard mentioned that this would finish up in end of the session budget bills, and I was hoping this was an end of session budget bill.
Are we all tired?
Yes, probably a little bit, but Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just ask Ms. Ames to confirm for us whether any of this money is spent on tobacco cessation programs, tobacco prevention, treating respiratory diseases, and treating cancers.
Research.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, none of the funds will be in this budget for tobacco cessation or prevention. But to the extent that it funds people in the health plan with respiratory illnesses, it will be for that.
And is there other money in other budgets that goes to any of the tobacco-related programs?
Yes.
In OHA's public health division, there are tobacco taxes that are dedicated to tobacco prevention and cessation. The budget for that in the 17-19 biennium is expected to be $16.3 million.
Thank you.
Any additional discussion? Any objections to the motion before the committee? Please note Representative McClain, Representative Smith, Senator Thompson. Motion carries. We will go on to the final item of the evening, SB 5545, OLCC Marijuana Fee Ratification. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank the Capital Construction Committee for complimenting me with the opportunity to carry this bill, even though I'm not a member of the committee and didn't know anything about it. As it turns out, Senate Bill 5545, with the -1 amendments, ratifies fees adopted by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and administratively approved by the Department of Administrative Services over the interim. The fees imposed are actual licensing fees for marijuana micro-tier producers and wholesalers, sampling laboratories, and a fee to change marijuana labeling or packaging that was previously approved. The fees account for approximately $1 million in anticipated revenue to the marijuana regulatory program and are assumed in the 2017-19 budget for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5545 be amended by the Dash 1 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Senator Thompson.
Will most of this money come in cash?
Oh.
Yes. We can accept cash.
Smells
right?
Funny.
Yes.
But we do accept cash.
Does anyone want to answer that? Probably the answer is yes. Yeah. In terms of not the
You've
fee.
You've got the agency right there.
This is the.
He's just being.
This is the
know
fee
know
revenue.
What?
I do want
I
to answer to this.
Is
this
late?
No.
Hey,
it's late. Just get on
well,
with it.
Okay, thank, no, thank you very much. I guess he's, the senator is satisfied.
Okay.
Now that we'll calm down for a second. Any additional discussion?
No.
Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Mr. Rocco, we do have a Capital Committee Monday morning. Can you give us any idea about when we may meet for the first time as a full committee?
I'm the chair of it. So there are 10 bills remaining for capital construction sub at this time, unless more are added. And that meeting's scheduled for 9 a.m. on Monday morning, and then it will be likely that the full committee will meet at 4 p.m. that day to finish up those bills.
Anything else for the good of the order? Seeing nothing, we are adjourned. We are adjourned. Anything else for the good of the order? Seeing nothing.